It's a realm where ordinary people face extraordinary worlds. Like fairy tale heroes, these men and women are folks whose lives suddenly go awry. And now these modern jacks and beauties confront challenges of body, mind, and spirit, with dark consequences if they fail. Deliria is a realm of innocence, challenge, and transformation, a place where the tales you tell are yours. A place where hope remains, the bravest force, and cleverness brings giants down. Welcome to Deliria. What might you become? Drunk. Real drunk. Okay, I'm looking at their character sheet, and it starts with, "This tale I will tell you about myself."
Well, yeah, I'm going to tell you a tale about myself and what I am and why I'm a guy. I'm a dude who's in.
Are you a barista? Are you a sexy barista with a air of danger about you?
Yeah, not you don't know where I've been or where that coffee's been, but you want
to
know.
But folks around town say you can talk to ravens, but I don't know if I believe them about that. But there's a twinkle in your eye, and your cloak always moves as if wind is blowing. Also, the next section of the character sheet just says portrait, and then there's like 10 lines to put text down?
Yeah, and there's also
there's
a
box. There's a box for you to draw a little picture of your super awesome raver who has a heart of gold but sometimes talks to the wind.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, you have to have the portrait lines and the portrait space, because I mean, maybe I can't draw, but I can draw with words. Maybe I'm a word artist, and the words flow like rainbows through a prism of your mind.
Will you accept the dance, or will the dance accept you? I like it so that you could actually write down what you think about your portrait. Like, you know,
portrait.
How does it make you feel?
I really fucked this one up. The nose is kind of weird. My eyes are off center. I'm sorry.
Okay, so, hi, John. I'm Jeff. This is the System Mastery Podcast, the podcast where we review an old RPG and then discuss it at great length.
You almost said where we review a dead horse.
Review a dead horse. This horse is gamey.
No, don't like it.
Continues to be dead. Poked with a stick. Result, inconclusive.
Day 12.
So, this is System Mastery. We review old role-playing games. This week, we are both a little tipsy here.
Yeah, we're a little drunk on the fairy wine. And also, fairy wine is strawberry vodka.
Oh, yeah, it's gotta be. We are reviewing the book Deliria, Fairy Tales for a New Millennium.
Yeah.
It's by Phil Brocato, who was instrumental in early Old World of Darkness.
Yeah, I think you mean Satiros Phil Brocato?
Yeah, I do. Is it Satiros or is it Phil Satiros Brocato? I think it is just Satiros Phil Brocato.
Yeah, I think Satiros is his first name-ish.
Now, did that happen after he wrote this book? Did he determine a new first name for himself, do you think? I mean, again, no research.
No, none. But I'm almost certain that he got to a point where he decided, yes, I am in fact satire-like.
Yeah. Do you think that gets him more play at parties and stuff when he introduces himself as...
You would not believe the trim that he pulls down when he introduces himself as Satiros.
Do you think he actually has to pull a pan flute out at the end of saying, "I'm Satiros, Phil Brocato"? No. Don't interrupt me. I have to finish. Let me get my pan flute out. I'm about to drop some Zanfear on you. Okay, so this book is from around 2002.
Yep.
And it feels like it.
Yeah, this is at the height of our dumb White Wolf era.
This is definitely one of those books where they want you to feel... It's a book for special snowflakes.
Yes, I mean, more than almost anything else, which was one of the more defining problems with the White Wolf series, where you are a special snowflake, this in particular is like, no, really you.
Grant
you
Woodward,
specifically
the
are
co-host
and
producer
of
that's
Saving
bad,
the Game, which is a
podcast this book,
about
by the way, was
a
Christians
gift.
And Gamers Back to the Table, which you can find at savingthegamepodcast.org. So, again, thanks very much, Grant, for the gift. This has been an awesome book. We don't totally hate you for convincing us to read this. Not at all.
You like podcasts, don't you, Woodward?
Okay, so He sent us two books, and the other one, the splat book for this game.
Oh my god. We're not even getting into it, but Jesus.
I want to talk about it very briefly, because we were just talking about how this is a game about how you are a special snowflake. The next book, the splat book, and I only skimmed it a little, is stats for playing as yourself.
Yeah, I mean, every gamer at some point has taken their game and gone, how would I stat myself in this game? What's my dexterity? What's my charisma?
You do it for about 5 minutes, and then you realize that you're fat and old and tired.
Then you're like, oh wait, I've got ones in every stat, and I'm terrible.
Oh shit, I would qualify for fighter because it doesn't have requirements. That's what happens to you.
Yeah.
So there's another book over there, and it works that way. There's classes in that. I mean, classes. This book. Let's be clear. This book has nothing.
No.
No rules. No. It's not. It's 170 pages into this main book before you find a rule.
No. This book is a watery fart of content.
Oh my god. So anyway, it has things for like playing indolent old man, toddler, just a tired guy,
indolent old toddler.
Just like in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, exactly.
So, let's get through the premise of what this is. And it took me a long time to get through the premise of what this is. For, I'd say about 100 pages of reading in this book, I didn't know if you play as fairies or just as someone whose job it is to kind of put up with fairies.
Am I a fairy or am I fairy adjacent?
Yeah. It turns out you're fairy adjacent, which led us to think about a much better game that we could be playing than what this is. Because this is a game of playing fairy tales, like, you know, Jack and the Beanstalk or Cinderella, that sort of thing. Fairy tales, with the difference being that fairy tales aren't actually about fairies, that's just a word they stick on there, and usually there aren't fairies in them, and if they are, they're extremely minor characters that briefly turn a pumpkin into a carriage or something.
Yeah.
In this, fairies take center stage and are annoying and prancy and stupid.
Yeah, you know, you live in the mundane world, but in the fairy world, everything is different. Why, there's mysteriums around every corner, and you might end up in a goblin market, and the goblins have things for sale, but everything they ask is far too much, but not more than you could afford. Maybe they want 3 robin's eggs! You're like, oh my Christ, shut the fuck up.
You hear a sound on the wind, but perhaps the wind itself is a sound. Dare you accept this cantata of music? That's... We could do this all day, because, and I'm not joking here, podcast listeners, if you flip this book open to a random page and stick your thumb on the start of a column, that column is some shenanigans about how great fairies are.
Hold on, I just did exactly that, and Deliria isn't just a place, it's the dream of place, an incarnation of the elements, and a reflection of all their properties. Everything in this living world has both a literal form and a symbolic essence. Okay, that was a random page with a random point.
I confirm this. He did not write that down in advance. It's just a random page. Every page starts like that. It takes hundreds of pages before you get to a rule about what the fuck your character does.
It is literally 170 pages in before they go, hey, maybe we should tell you anything.
If you want a word of the day calendar where the word of the day is always, fairies are great, this is the book to buy.
If you just can't get enough of whimsy... Yeah. Then, boy, do I have an RPG for you.
Oh, my God. Okay. So, I feel like I'm cheating by stopping talking about the first 150 pages of this book. But let's real quickly jump to the back and talk about what the rules of this fucking thing are. You play as some fucking guy.
You are just some dude.
And you have 3 stats that split into a bunch of different substats.
But maybe you don't even have stats at all. Maybe you use the power of imagination and camaraderie to decide what happens.
After all, if you use stats, your stats will come to use you.
Yeah, okay. So the book presents literally everything in it in 3 different steps of either you do this full LARP, there are no stats, there's no anything, and if you want to decide what happens, you either convince your storyteller guy that you want to be the king of hot shit,
yeah.
And he says, I don't know if you're the king of hot shit.
And then you act it out, and a council of 3, or perhaps it is 6, determine it under a full moon before they rub butter on a voodoo doll. No, okay, so he's right, there are 3 modes. There's full-on LARP, which you still have a deck of cards, because...
Yeah, you can still take a chance.
Because the game either uses a deck of cards or 2d10 for resolution.
Which, okay, so the deck of cards is, you have your 4 suits, and the black suits, if you pull a card and it's a regular number, then it is a negative of that amount to whatever your personal stats are, which is your grace, which, oh my god. Anyway, so the black suits are negative, the red suits are positive, and then you have the face cards will do certain things.
Yes, like the jack is different from the queen and so on, and don't even ask me to remember what they are.
Okay, so you take out the king of it's one hearts red king and the king of clubs.
It doesn't really matter. You take out a red king and a black king.
And then if you draw the king of the red cards, then you have a super awesome triumph no matter what your shit was. And if you pull the king of the black cards, then everything sucks forever and you're a big dumb idiot.
Yep. Now, this is because this game is the LARPiest game we've ever read. And we've read Nexus Live Action Role Playing.
Yeah, it has LARP in the name, and this is way LARPier.
This is the LARPiest book I've ever seen. So, you have a deck of cards, because dice take you right out of a LARP, I assume.
Probably.
I guess so. I mean, I've never actually played in one, but I always hear it's like rock, paper, scissors, and smoking in the emergency stairwell. Is pretty much what a LARP is.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you have dice, you have to have a place to roll dice.
Yeah.
And that means you can't be dancing in the fields, naked. No. While you sing your praises to the fairy queen!
And sing the song of the crabs!
Well, I mean, if you're dancing naked in the forest, you're probably going to have to sing a song to the crabs, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And it's going to be their life song, and you will learn all about them. But, okay, so that's how the chance mechanic works. The D10 version of it is the exact same resolution, just using D10s instead of cards. And I'm going to try and drunkenly explain this. You roll 2d10, and one of them is face, and the other one is number. So on a 1 through 4, it's red. On a 5 through 8, it's black. On a 9 through 10, it becomes a face card. And then you go over to your 1 through 10 die, which would normally be numbers one, or cards 1 or ace through 10. And instead, you use a chart to determine which face card it is.
Yep. Good job. You did it.
With the chart being, you know, like 1 through 2 is the black queen, 3 through 4 is the red queen, etc. So it's a little annoying to try and run that. And that's where if you're playing this game tabletop. So there's the LARP mode.
Yep. Then there's basic mode.
Basic mode, which is, imagine if D&D didn't have skills. That's basic mode. Like if every time you rolled anything, it was just like strength check. Except in this game, there's only 3 stats, so it'd always be mind check, or body check, or spirit check.
Yeah, so you've got your 3 stats, and you could have, they are your keys. Mm-hmm. You have 3 keys.
Yes, you have 3 keys.
Yeah, I saw 3 keys.
Come sailing in.
And these 3 keys are going to be all that you do. You do have skills, but you have a vocation.
Mm-hmm. Which are additionally keys, and each one of the vocations splits down into even more sub-vocation-y things.
Yeah, so you could be, like, I've got a vocation in technology, and then you could split that up into specifically, like, computers or radio or what have you.
We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, because that's what advanced is.
Yeah.
So basic is you have a couple of vocations, very simple ones, things like technology. And,
so, you know,
athletics.
Your computer has a virus and you have mind and technology, and that is your grace.
Yep. Okay, then now let's move to advanced, because advanced is the final frontier of this. This is the hard mode of this game for serious LARPers.
This is advanced, Mark.
Yeah. If you can pull this off, then you're going to pull down more trim than a guy named Satyros.
How is that even possible?
I don't think it is. I mean, maybe Satyros in a 3 Wolf Moon shirt.
Which, I mean, basically is just Satyros in my mind. I imagine him
always
constantly in the 3 Wolf Moon.
I assume if he takes off his 3 Wolf Moon shirt, there's another one underneath it.
Yeah, he is a never nude, but specifically for 3 Wolf Moon.
Okay, so when you switch from basic to advanced, your keys expand. So your body, for example, suddenly switches from just being body to being a core body stat, and then agility, beauty, health, and strength. So you switch from having 3 stats to 15, because you still have your key, and then each one of them has 4 substats.
Yeah, because something might happen to your key specifically, or something might happen to just one of your stats.
Mm-hmm. And the way that you calculate them is convoluted and stupid, if I remember. I mean,
you've got essentially a point buy system
in this
game.
Yeah, it's point buy. And the way that it works is that when you get a key, like say for example you have a body of 4, which is I think higher than normal, then each one of your substats is also a 4 until you mess with them.
Well, you get a number of points equal to, whatever your stat is, I think, times the number of substats.
Exactly.
So that everything could be even, but you could just say, instead of a 4 and a 4, I've got a 3 and a 7, or whatever the fuck. Or...
It lets you be way better, for example, with your mind at imagination than you are at perception.
Yeah, because maybe you see things not as they are, but as they could be, out in the ether, floating, formless, and yet formed.
That's the best thing right there. That's the way that you do this. If you want to learn how to talk like a weird fairy idiot, just deny your own stuff right in the middle of the sentence.
Yeah. You just proclaim something to be one way and that maybe it's not.
So let's run through those real quick. Imagination, intellect, perception, wisdom, belief, charm, passion, will, strength, health, beauty, and agility.
Yeah. So... each of them, then, your keys also have interactions with their systems in similar ways.
Yes.
Basically, anything you do, combat is resolved, whether you're doing physical combat or social combat,
mm-hmm.
the exact same way.
Or magic combat, which is if you roll spirit at somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, each of your different keys is a different way to attack or defend against something. So if someone is trying to physically punch you, then you've got your body stat and you can use that. And then if someone is trying to besmirch your good name, then you've got your mind stat and you can try to socialize back at them. And then if someone is trying to actually rip your soul out of your body, then you have your spirit stat and you can try and do something against that.
So here's how this all works. You take, let's say we're playing basic. So I look at my spirit stat, and let's say I have a spirit stat of 3. Then I look at a vocation that I'd like to use to defend against someone ripping out my soul, and I go with, I don't know, a cult or something. And because let's get this out there, I'm looking right now at the character sheet, and the vocation list is icons, not names, icons.
This is throughout the entire book too.
Oh yeah, there's icons everywhere. This is the 2002-iest book you've ever seen in your life.
Instead of just saying, "Hey, this would be something that keys off of mind," they'll have a little picture of the mind stat thing, mm-hmm. and that's it.
Yeah, Phil looked at pictograms from 3,000 years ago and thought, you know, I think those are going to come back in a big way.
Well, yeah.
I think all of our division of that into actual language that you can understand and read, well, that's just backwards. We should go back to the way Sumerians read.
Or did Sumerians read us?
So let's say, here's the list of these things. Picture of a little scroll that says Cansmeus on it. Artist palette, that's a vocation. Slide rule and angle ruler, Garden of Eden, scissors, heart, and paper, keys and a wine or a martini glass, something that says language in 3 languages, boxing gloves in front of a metal disc. I think that's supposed to be used to measure how far your spark plug is from the spark handle. A wooden door and science stuff,
equations and a thing,
equations and a beaker.
Hooray!
So those are your vocations. So let's say I try to resist someone attempting to rip my soul out. First, I take my spirit of 3. Then I add my, I don't know, I'm going to go with martini glass and keys of 2, and I get a total stat of 5. Now, the person who's trying to attack me has presented me with a strong challenge. Now, a strong challenge requires at least an 8 to evade. I only have a 5, so I can't simply evade it. Dare I take a chance?
Maybe. You take the chance.
Now, to take a chance, I draw a card. Or do that complicated dice nonsense I mentioned earlier. Let's go with cards. I draw a card from the modified deck that contains no jokers, no king of diamonds, and no king of clubs.
And let me just say, it is horseshit that a game about fairies and bullshit like that doesn't keep the jokers in there.
I know!
What the fuck?
Those should be, whatever they call the DM in this game, wild cards, right?
Oh yeah, no, when you pull the joker, it should be like, and then a fairy shows up and turns your testicles into butterflies!
Or perhaps, he turns your butterflies into testicles!
That would be the saddest. I'm sitting there with like a jar full of butterflies, and all of a sudden a fairy comes by and is like, ha ha! And then I just have a jar of testicles.
See, now I picture...
How am I going to explain this to my mom when I come home from butterfly catching when I've got a net and a jar of testicles?
She's going to say, John, I sent you out with those magic beans to purchase a cow, and instead you brought home a jar of balls. This is a terrible fairy tale. Get back to work at Circuit City. After all, this is 2002, and they're not long gone. Okay, so So basically, you draw a card, and if it's a face card, you add or subtract its value based on whether it is red or black. So let's say I drew a 3 or higher of hearts. Yay, I got to an 8, and my magical task of resisting my mind getting ripped out is a success.
Hooray!
And that's basically the core concept of the game. Now, it can get way more advanced. For example, if you want, let's say you want to drive a car. If you're playing LARP mode, you say, I would like to drive a car. And then your DM or ST or Fairy Master or whatever his name is says, well, I don't know. Do you think your character can drive a car? And you say, well, with a flourish of my trench coat, I whip my hair back and forth and then flash my gray turning into slightly into purple eyes. And then I drive the car. And he says, well, that seems like an adequate description, so I'll confer with the council. And then he confers with the council and they say, fine, you drive the fucking car. If you're playing basic, then you roll, I don't know, which one do you think it is, body or mind to drive a car?
Probably mind, I guess.
Then you just check your mind, and if your mind is higher than the difficulty of driving a car, then you do, and if it's not, then you take a chance, and then you do or you don't. If you play advanced, then it's roll your mind plus your, let's say, I don't know, which one of these do you think is driving? I'm going to say slide rule, socket wrench, and piece of paper. Which a subcategory could be, but it isn't, because they aren't subcategories. You're supposed to make them up yourself. Driving.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe it's not driving. Maybe your subcategories for that one are socket wrenching, angle ruler, and piece of papering.
Or maybe I've got a subcategory that's just movement, and I say, isn't driving just moving? Wouldn't I be able to move? Or does the world move around me as I sit in my car?
I gotta say, normally that would be where my thought process would go. I'd create a skill called doing stuff.
All right. In my science vocation, I've created the subcategory of science.
Yeah.
So,
and then,
fuck you.
In my mental category, I've created the subcategory of thinking. And I use that one whenever I need to accomplish a task that involves some kind of thinking.
Yeah. And then in my fighting category, I've got hitting guys.
Yeah. And then over in spirit, I've got, spirituality. So, I think I'm all set to play this game. Except this game is so dumb that I didn't even engage the part of my brain that is a power gamer. It didn't even turn on. At no point was I like, oh, I could beat this game. I don't want to.
No, you don't want to beat this game because that requires engaging with this game.
I kind of want to hold it with tongs.
I feel like the more I touch this game, the more it infects me. Or do I infect it?
The only good thing about this game is it brings me back to a world of 2002 where I haven't seen Independence Day yet, so I've got that to look forward to.
Yes, you will be entirely welcome to Earth.
It'll be amazing. It'll be a welcome change from this.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the setting of Deliria.
Do we have to?
Kind of. All right, so the game purports that you play as a normal person who's going to grow and learn by going on magical adventures.
And let me just say, this isn't normally fantasy-based as far as, like, you're playing as a chit farmer, you're not playing as a knight or like that.
No. It's got the categories of things that you could play as, because there's a section in the beginning that's, like, the archetypes of what a fairy tale hero is. And they have some things that are pretty obviously old-school fairy tale heroes. You got your knight, you've got your inquisitive princess. They have a whole list of stuff like that. But then, because the game is set in 2002...
Yeah, you're not going to be in an actual fantasy setting. You're going to be in modern day. You're going to be some retail worker or, I don't know, a CEO who learns the true meaning of Christmas.
Oh, so you can play Scrooged?
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Exactly.
If this was the licensed Scrooged RPG...
Which, let me tell you, is amazing.
Oh my god, if you guys haven't found the licensed Scrooged RPG...
Now, not to be confused with the Scrooge RPG, yeah. Where you play as Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah, yeah, and everyone does. All four players control Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah, his various aspects.
Yeah, you can play as DuckTales, or the concept of greed that embodies him, or the old Karl Barks comics, or simply Duckhood.
Yeah, just Duckness.
Duckness, the essence of duck. If you can tell, it's because this book doesn't have a whole lot of content. It's kind of dragging us off the mark. It's really big, though.
Oh, it's a huge book with a bunch of dumb shit.
It's a White Wolf book. It's the size of any other White Wolf book you've seen. Okay, so, your character discovers that there's a fairy world out there. Now, he does this by having a guide who drags him there. A white rabbit, if you will. A sort of person who goes, hey, I know a hidden secret, or perhaps a glen, and if we go to that glen, or is it a copse, then perhaps we could make out in it. And then you follow them there, and the next thing you know, an ogre is demanding toll for entering his dread realm or
something.
And then
you're making out with a troll.
Yeah, it just spirals downhill from there. So, that's the basic premise of this game, is that you play in the real world, but there is a fairy world out there, and it is called Deliria.
Yeah.
And that's where the name comes from. So this is the world of fairies, where magic is real, and everything is animistic and a metaphor. So perhaps you meet if you meet a faun in the woods, is that actually a faun? Does it follow the rules of fauns?
Is it Mr. Tumnus?
Perhaps it's Mr. Tumnus. Perhaps it's actually just a faun, like a young deer. And if you meet one of those, then it's going to learn a lesson about how man has entered the forest.
Oh, maybe it's a doe, a female deer. And maybe it's faw.
If you shoot it with a ray, a golden ray of light. Sorry. Okay. So Deliria is divided up into a bunch of kingdoms, which are called, I don't know, principalities or...
No, it's gonna have some stupid bullshit...
Fluffer nutters or whatever. Who cares?
You're in the Altwald.
Okay, these are the different types of fairy tale stories that exist. So perhaps you've got the deep sea one where you can play Little Mermaid out and everything's all terrifying and crazy.
You've got your green world where it's all forests and you go through the enchanted woods and there's all sorts of brownies and pixies and things in there.
Right, and then you stumble out of a bush on one end and a park ranger finds you and you realize that it's actually the modern day and you're like, wait, why am I still watching M. Night Shyamalan movies? There were three good ones.
Hey man, The Village was all right.
Okay, all right. The village has some good atmosphere to it.
Yeah.
Alright, fine.
Let's all just say The Village was okay.
Let's digress real quick. Are we in agreement that Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, and Signs are all okay?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the ending of Signs was a giant steaming turd.
Well, okay, let's assume that you have to ignore the endings of the films.
Yeah.
Okay, Sixth Sense has a great ending because it's actually got the twist thing. And Unbreakable has an okay ending. And Signs has a giant steaming turd of an ending. And... the ending of The Village, is the first point at which I officially felt insulted. The first time where I was like, oh, get fucked. Literally, these guys pay to keep airplanes from flying over them and shit. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Also, all of these people talk like 18th century old-timey goofballs, and yet all of them, every single one of them, was born in, like, New York in 1988.
Yeah. Well, you also, one of the, interestingly, why I like The Village is because everyone says that the acting was kind of poor, but you realize that all of the grown-ups are the ones who do the accents and things aren't doing it well, but the ones that are playing the children actually don't mess up in their grammar and how they say things because they grew up with it instead of being one of the adults. So this has been my digression for why I think The Village is actually good and people can eat my dick.
I don't even think it's a digression. I feel like the adults are playing Deliria.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, we are in a fairy world.
Those we must not speak of. They will bring about ruin if you wear the color red.
Yeah, so that makes perfect sense.
Yes.
You could totally play Deliria as a game of the fucking village.
That is basically the green world.
Yeah. Now, there's also one that's D&D Planet.
Oh, Planet D&D.
It's not actually called that. I'm not going to remember. It's just some name like Vault.
I think it's called Faerun.
Yeah, Faerun. Yeah. It's called Grey Hawk. That's a weird name.
It's called Eberron?
Dark Sun?
It's called Oriental Adventures?
Spelljammers? How long can we do this? No, okay, let's not, because that's boring. It's called, like, Valkmer or something, and it's the D&D world where princesses rule, and there are dark elves who crave your power and what have you. There's also one that's called the Barbarian Realms. This is my favorite one. The New Barbarians. The New Barbarians. Didn't they write that Don't Give Up song from like 1991?
I'm pretty sure the New Barbarians had that song where they're like, you drive me crazy. I'm pretty sure that was the New Barbarians.
Oh, I could have sworn they sang the Don't Give Up, You've Got a Reason to Live.
Anyone? New Barbarians? Anyone?
Something. It's one of those, right?
Yeah, one of them. Maybe both.
Maybe both.
Why they not? Split up, came back together.
No. The truth is far worse than our dumb mugging. The truth is that New Barbarians are humans who have entered the fairy world by playing World of Warcraft. Except it's 2002, so it's mostly people who are entering the fairy world by playing EverQuest.
Yeah.
Or what else would be back that old?
City of Heroes?
Yeah. So that's what it is. It's people who have entered the fairy world by playing online role-playing games, Except they have recently realized a few of them, a very scant few, the mysterious ones of great power, whose souls burn as if burning souls! They have learned that there's a way to get into the game. For real.
Yeah, I really want them to just be people who play MUDs. And so they spend their entire life in a text-based world where they're like, I'd like to get ye flask.
You cannot get ye flask.
Damn it!
It's just, don't go over to New Barbaria. Like, stay here in Volkmer, the D&D world, because as soon as you get over there, it's all text-based, and you are likely to be eaten by a Gru.
Exactly. It's real dark there.
Except it's all EverQuest-y. That's what it is. And this is the way that they describe it. The New Barbarians don't realize that they're killing fairies in a real world. They think they're playing a video game, for the most part. And so fairies who are endlessly amused by everything will occasionally go over there to fight them and have fun. But recently, it has become a danger. There are people who get into the fairy world by walking through a door in their game. So basically they Captain N and the Game Master themselves into fairy planet.
They were drinking fairy juice and then they tripped and fell through a door and hit their head on something and now they're in a fairy land.
Yeah, lightning struck them and they went whipping through and then their skin turned blue and they started mugging like the Mask.
Yeah, all of a sudden lightning crashes and a new mother dies.
I can feel it. All right. So, there are a lot of worlds like that.
Yeah.
A lot of them you can kind of tell what their influence is. And their influences aren't things you'd expect. It's not like there's Tolkien world or C.S. Lewis world where there's clearly a world of ice and the fairy and the cold princess rules it and perhaps you meet a faun. No, it's not like that. It's modern stuff. So it's got people who play D&D go to D&D world. And people who play EverQuest go to EverQuest World. And people who are majoring in marine biology because they really think that's going to take them somewhere, they go to Ocean Planet.
Because they think, oh man, these sea creatures are awesome, I want to do that. And then they end up looking at samples of ocean dirt for 20 hours.
Every day. For the rest of their life. I'm going to work with dolphins. Nope, you're going to work with their poop.
You're going to go ahead and study a little piece of dolphin poop and figure out if it's got worms.
See if you can teach that microbe to jump through a hoop. Congratulations on going to Scripps.
There's a bunch of different worlds. There's all the shenanigans. And it has then, after it details all of the places you could go, it begins detailing all of the different themes that could exist. And so it goes into the classic fairy tale motifs of, like, maybe your thing represents transformation. So, like, people that turn into animals, or animals that turn into people, or
pumpkins turn into carriages.
Boys becoming men.
Men becoming wolves. Or perhaps your theme is heroism.
Yeah.
Etc.
And so all of these different things, they'll give some examples of, like, oh, these are fairy tales that use that as the theme. This is what you could possibly do in your game to represent that theme. Mm-hmm. Whether you want to say, okay, I'm doing a heroism game. All right, well, we're going to make it so that someone has been kidnapped and you've got to go find them and they've been taken to the mall on the outskirts of town that's been abandoned and you've got to find them and there's some monster there and it turns out it was Old Man Withers. And, oh, wait, I'm playing Scooby-Doo now.
You are. You're playing Old Man Withers at Scooby-Doo. And you pull off his mask and instead it's Scrappy-Doo.
But maybe it is I who wear the mask, for aren't we all players in this play?
Did you just claim to be Scrappy-Doo? That's the worst thing anyone's ever claimed.
Pa-pa-pa-pa! Puppy power!
I think one of the more interesting things about this game, if I have to throw anything interesting to it, it's that it actually tells you that one player should be the main character.
Which, ends up kind of happening in a lot of games where whoever the player with the most charisma or the most LARP ability...
Right, yeah, oh, that's fair. I mean, this one tells you to rotate.
Yeah.
Today's a Jason story, so his character... Fulululia, the amazing barista, because this game is the worst concept.
Yeah, so you'll take turns of, like, all right, here's the story of Ma, and because you're telling a fairy tale, most fairy tales don't generally revolve around more than one, maybe two characters.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So, you know, you get all of your single stories, maybe you have a Hansel and Gretel where it's the two of them.
Yeah, there's a couple of those that exist out there.
But you usually don't have an entire entourage of people that all get center stage, at various points in time in your fairy tale.
I mean, granted, there's the potential to play as, say, for example, three pigs who have to learn about house building.
Yeah.
Or three bears whose home is invaded by a cruel spirit that ruins their porridge.
Except mostly, that would be playing as the cruel spirit of porridge ruining.
Are you?
Or am I not?
Or does the spirit play you?
Oh, or has the porridge ruined me? For have I tasted divinity?
You play as... They want you to have one core character, and then everyone else plays their character, or they... I love this section where it's like, well, there's one guy who's part of your LARP circle who has been pulling a lot of late hours recently. So instead of playing one character, he plays a lot of characters who pop in and out and do little things.
Yeah, it gives you the option of, if you didn't want to play the character that you made, you could play a bunch of bullshit NPCs for me, because I'm real boring as the ST.
Well, it's because it's a LARP thing. You can't have the ST jumping back and forth across the room and being like, now I am a mysterious raver.
Well, I mean, probably.
Imagine the width of my pants.
Yeah.
I don't have to, Jim.
I will do no such thing.
I don't have to, Jim. I can already see the width of your pants.
There's gonna be a lot of different suggestions for how to do it, what to do. There's sample NPCs.
About to ask if we could talk about the sample NPCs.
Oh, God.
Every single one of them, I shit you not, has the worst name. like you keep thinking, oh no, I found the worst name. Oh no, never mind, I found the worst name. And they're all things like Mahogany Black,
Brimstone Green, and just Autumn. My name is Autumn. Okay, great.
My babysitter in high school was named Autumn. Middle school. There we go. That makes me sound less lame.
But I'm Malachi Fortune.
Okay, Malachi Fortune. When I flipped this book open to a random page, I got Malachi Fortune. Malachi Fortune is Neo, or not Neo, fucking Morpheus from The Matrix.
Yep.
Except he's a fairy game guy, and it describes him as having a trench coat that always blows in the wind, flashing eyes, impossibly high cheekbones, skin like onyx with white set blazing teeth contained therein. He's the most Mary Sue-iest NPC I've ever seen.
Yeah, let me just tell you that he wears dark glasses that reflect the face of whomever he's speaking to. Morpheus.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to contain eternity if he's looking at nothing in particular. Fortune speaks in graceful enigmas and seems more like a fluid shadow than a man. Also, he's fighting Neil. Let's go to the room.
Okay, he's more like a fluid shadow than a man. That's one of your NPCs. That gives you an idea of what they want your PC to be. And let's say right now that Malachi Fortune or whatever his name is has a picture of a guy. There's art of a black guy. Because it's not always the case in this book. This book's got a lot of clip art in it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of women in this book who look like Alanis Morissette attending a moot.
The art in this book varies so wildly.
A lot of it's really good. It's some of the best art we've seen in a book in a long time. If what you like is really, really high quality pictures of tits.
Yeah, if you really want some tits and fairy wings behind those tits.
Yeah.
Great. Good job. You did it. You found the game.
Yeah. There's a lot of T in this game. There's even some A in this game, and I'm going to go ahead and say it. This is the first time I've ever seen it in this game. In any game, there's some V. There's one shot in there where you straight up get a picture of just a naked lady looking at you.
She's like, what's up?
From head on. She's like, I shave constantly, because that's what you do in fairyland. I live in the land of waxing.
Yeah, and then you get some where you get that horrible, I took a picture of my buddy.
Yeah.
And then I just photoshopped a hat on top of him.
Oh, God, that one? The one of the magician?
Yeah, there's a magician where it's obviously some dude's Burning Man friend who he was like, can you, like, wear a top hat or whatever? And he's like, oh, that doesn't look good enough. And then photoshopped it so, like, cards were shooting out from his coat.
There is no way that guy doesn't exist now. Like, that's prophetic, that picture of that magician from 2002. Nowadays, that guy is real. His name is Shadow Mist, and it's his PUA name. Somewhere, right now, Shadow Mist the douche magician is engaging a two set.
Yeah.
And one of them is a seven. I swear to fucking God, bro.
Yeah.
That's...
It is... I need to share that picture with everyone because it is fucking amazing.
Oh, it makes me so mad looking at that picture. I'm like, oh, get the fuck out of my house, you douche. Quit trying to convince the random girls to do ecstasy. Quit snorting cocaine off a picture of my sister. Get out of my house.
So, in addition to the decent art and the obviously just a picture with Photoshop art,
mm-hmm.
you have some bad art.
There's a lot of bad art.
And some mediocre art.
Yeah. But, you know, the highs are high. I'll give it that.
Yeah, you do at least have that. So that's something?
That's something. Now, a lot of the art in this book is just icons.
Yes, there's icons everywhere.
There's a section where he has three icons in a row, and they're just increasing in complexity. Like, the first one's a head, and the second one's a head with some swirls around it, and the third one is a head with some swirls and some magic, and I think it has earrings or something. And it literally says, icons like this will follow it throughout the book. They are self-explanatory.
Yeah, the book will just have a section where it's like, all right, we're going to talk about fairy motifs, and in front of that is just some triangle with an eye and two sparkles coming out of it, and you're like, what the fuck does that even mean?
I think if you click on it, you get to play Bejeweled. Is that
sweet.
Is that accurate? I don't know. It's full of these little stupid gem-shaped icons. Okay. This game has some powers your character can have after you've figured out your stats.
Some powers.
There's not very many. It's way near the back of the book. Like, I thought I was done when I hit the powers.
Oh, yeah. Because normally, going through this, I figured, oh, I'm just playing a guy and everyone else has ridiculous fairy magic or they can make me deals and give me potions and whatnot. But anything I get is based on someone else handing me a thing and not because I am particularly magical.
But the powers are all things like you are more perceptive than other people, or you are slightly empathic.
Yeah, they've got kind of a, like a merits and flaws system.
Yes.
So you can be like, all right, I do my merits and flaws, I can get more merits if I pick more flaws, ugh.
Animals like you.
Animals hate me. That's the kind of thing. Points.
And literally, the last three pages of this book, before you get to the terrible, terrible three-page character sheet, is how to build spells. Because you can be a spellcaster, and the only thing for being a spellcaster is you have to have a mind of 5 and a spirit of 6. If you have those stats, you're a spellcaster, done. To cast spells, you have to create them. Every spell is created, and it has to have what the spell does, what the spell costs to do that, how the spell could be broken, and what you need the spell for. You need to have these things, and then you're allowed to cast a spell.
Yep, and there's a bunch of different types.
Yeah.
You can do, like, protection spells or binding, destruction spells, yeah, or whatever it happens to be.
I'll say again, because I want to throw nice things to the book when I can, even though I want to be fair. It's neat that the spells have to each come with a way that they are broken. Yeah. Because that makes sense for fairy tales.
Yeah, that's great. If you decide, all right, I took a spell and it makes so your armor is ever rusting no matter what armor you put on. You're like, oh, okay, then there has to be some way to break that curse.
True love's kiss.
Yeah, why not?
It's always fucking true love's kiss.
Always, every time.
Yeah, every time. What's this spell do? Oh, it turns water into milk. Oh, how do you turn it back into water? True love's kiss. To who? Who gets the kiss? Don't worry about it. The milk. I don't fuck. Leave me alone.
And, okay, just because I was at the magic section and I need to read more of this book to you so you know what happened when we read this book.
Bring it.
Okay, this is a little thing called The Magic is You.
Or are you the magic?
Ray Cross's fiddle sings of age, of dying heroes and rich tomorrows. With gypsy lilts and Hebrew longings, it spins out wordless tales. Musica, the language of the fae. Brown fingers skitter notes across the catgut strings. Soft breath flares across the fiddle skin, alive. Ray and fiddle merge, become one entity, and invoke their muse together.
What's Hebrew longing?
Is that
like
a really good gefilte fish?
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, is it like an old mom sitting in a chair and just saying, "You do whatever you want to do."
Hebrew longings, I would like if you'd visit maybe once in a while, but you don't have to.
Oh, fine, leave me here in the dark.
That's fine, I'm fine by myself. God knows I could trip and break my neck, but you do whatever you want to do.
Hebrew longings.
Hebrew longings.
Fiddle skins.
Yeah, fiddle skins brings you Hebrew longings.
Fiddle skins are what I order when I'm in a sports bar. I order fiddle skins and I order cheese dudes.
Every time I go to Hebrew Longings, my favorite deli, I get some fiddle skins and cheese dudes.
That's what the whole book is like. I can't stress this enough. If you ever find a copy of this book, open it to a random page and start reading, and what you are reading about is how fairies are great. Now, you don't think you're reading about fairies are great. You think you're reading about how ether is all around you, except you're all around ether, and perhaps if the song calls you, a light will come forth from a goat.
The Okay, so we were just talking about the spells and the shit you can do.
Yes, powers. Your characters and little powers.
And how fairies are great.
Mm-hmm. We haven't actually talked about what fairies are yet.
Well, the big thing for me is this book is wall to wall. Your character is garbage and the NPCs are amazing.
Yes.
It never stops reminding you that, okay, maybe you have a spell that can heal someone, but there's no such thing as resurrection unless a powerful NPC shows up and does it.
Yeah.
Like, great, okay, wonderful. All right,
so fairies do it. Okay, whatever.
Every single time it talks about anything you could do, it always goes, but there's a limit, you can't do much. Except for NPCs, who are always better than you in every way.
Fairies can do whatever they want. In the second book, in the Splat book, it mentions briefly rules for how to play as fairies. But it does mention that you can only play as crappy, basic fairies, the kind that are...
Oh, them basic fairies always getting them lattes.
Yeah, the magic winged lattes. And
getting their fairy yoga pants.
Ethereal Ugg boots. Wearing their North Face jacket of protection. Yeah, actually, it's a sleeveless vest. Excuse me.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. My basic is a little off. They summon the entities of the spheres with a vanilla candle from Yankee Candle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. You can play as fairies, but you have to play as one of the lower fairies because the good ones are way too good for players to play.
Yeah. It is always insisting that no matter what you do, these fairies are better than you.
So there are like four kinds of fairies. And the fairies come in little, basically, lights, like, just kind of whizzly, diddly lights that flutter around people who are being creative, or perhaps they repair shoes in the night. That sort of fairy. Basically, the fairies from, like, the first Ewok TV movie. The kind that are just a little light and you catch it, and then later it scares a giant.
It's like the fairies from Willow.
Yeah, or the fairies from they're useless. Exactly, yeah, just like
they do nothing. Yeah. They're just little lights. The most any one of them does is kiss Willow on the nose. Yeah. That's it.
Now, the next step up is like the pixies or brownies or whatever from Willow.
Again, from Willow.
Yeah, we're using a Willow-based economy here. So, at this point, you've got those two little assholes in Willow that fall in beer and yell beer.
Yeah, you've got Frenchie and whatever the fuck the other one's name was, played by Kevin Pollak.
Yeah, played by Kevin. Let's go ahead and say it was probably named Christopher Walken then.
There you go.
I fell in beer.
Beer!
Okay, so those ones are a little more formative, but they look like children. They're very small. They don't have as much power on the world, but they still have way more than you do, you crappy player.
Yeah.
And they're basically little cheruby guys. They're cute. Now, the next step up is human-sized fairies who are kind of magical and interesting and
sort of your general fae.
Yeah, yeah. The sort of fairy you picture when like life-sized fairy, like someone who's the same size, someone who has wings sticking out of their back.
You know, in Hook, when Tinkerbell got all big and she was like, put it in me.
Yeah, you remember in Big when Tom Hanks got all big and was like, put it in me?
Yes, I remember that. I read your fan fiction.
Okay, you're right. That's what it is. That's perfect. When Julia Roberts gets all big in Hook.
Yes.
Okay. Or to keep using Willow math, I'm going to say that one's what? Mad Mardigan. Sure. Why not? If Mad Mardigan had cute little wings.
No, it's Finn Rizzell.
Oh, Finn Rizzell. Yeah, thanks for being able to remember that name.
Yeah, there you go.
And then there are noble fairies, which are like the kings of fairies. They're the best.
Yeah, and that is the fairy queen that gives him the Shalindria. Shalindra!
Very nice.
Shalindra has a wand that gives to Willow, and she's a big fuck-off spirit fairy, and there you go.
So it's the Willow RPG, except that instead of playing Willow, you play the village.
Yes. You are a shitty midget with a shitty life, and then a fucking fairy shows up and screws everything
up. At the most, you can hope to play that second rank of fairy, which is like the girl Gelfling in Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty fun.
Maybe you're Burgle Cut and you're in charge of the money in the village.
Your knowledge of Willow is astonishing me right now.
Yeah.
I remember being scared shitless of that movie as a kid because the troll turning into a two-headed Rockyosaurus monster. That is scary.
When it first happens, the effect is its hair gets ripped off and it's all blood, muscle, sinew beneath it. And you're like, oh, Jesus.
This scene, whoa. So if you were also scared by the scene where a troll turns into a two-headed monster in Willow, after first turning into a pulsating football made of meat and fur, then please leave a comment in the comment section below. All right, we got about 10 minutes left, so let's talk about our favorite and least favorite aspects of this game, which is going to be the most fun part.
Yep.
So, John, what would you say is your favorite thing about Deliria, Fairy Tales for the New Millennium?
Oh, God. Okay. Jesus. Okay.
I have listed at least two good things.
Yeah, and I don't like either of them. I'd probably say my favorite thing in the book is the split in rules. I actually like the basic advanced split. Well, I don't really care for the LARP bit, because a lot of it ends up being oddly taking some of the rules from the basic, and then in weird ways they start talking about, like, how you would resolve certain things, and it ends up being way more complicated because you're trying to LARP out stuff instead of just rolling for it.
It ends up, again, it ends up with him, like, consulting other players. So it ends up saying, like, oh, at this point you have to forward...
Do the other players think you accomplished your goal with the little play that you put on?
Yeah. And, I've never played in a LARP, but my understanding from people who have talked to them is that they are the clickiest things in the world.
Yeah. So it'd be like, no, Deborah, you didn't accomplish anything.
Yeah.
So... The split basically between the advanced or basic rules is nice. It lets you decide on granularity, which is good. I like that it gives you the option of, did you just want to have like three stats and not give a fuck about things? Great, go for it. If you want to get into the nitty gritty of this and really dig into the system, sure, go for it.
Yeah, I like that too. I think that's fair. I like the LARPy system just because I think it's neat that this game came with rules for LARPing. Like, I remember reading, you know, most people LARP.
Well, honestly, reading this, the book is just, you want this to be a LARP book, and he added in some rules.
Well, okay, I've never read Vampire Old World of Darkness. I've never read Vampire New World of Darkness. It's a blind spot in my RPG history.
That's real sad.
And
then
it's weird, right? I should have read it by now. But I don't think it has rules for LARPing it. I think you have to buy some second book, Mind's Eye Theater or something. Yeah. To LARP with it. So this book at least was like, right out the gate, this is a LARP. You know, you're probably going to want to LARP with this. You're going to want to hang around with your friends who all wear corsets so that their boobs look like shelves. That's what this is.
Yeah. And the addition of the system was nice. It does get very fiddly if you want it to. Like, all of the various modifiers just for doing one thing is insane.
Oh, yeah, it gets very Fiddleskins. You're right.
Yeah, it's super Fiddleskins.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, what's your favorite thing about Deliria?
I think I may have already said what my favorite thing about Deliria was. I like the way that characters can jump, or players can jump, between playing different things. And I think that was my favorite thing about Nobilis as well, which was the concept that a character can...
If you're not involved in the scene.
Yeah, you're still involved.
Yeah.
So you're not just sitting there waiting. Because, you know, if you've played enough D&D and other games over the years, you've kind of developed this feeling of, don't split the party, because Lord knows if you leave me alone for a minute, I'm going to just get lost in a game of Super Hexagon and never come out.
Yeah, I mean, especially nowadays with the smartphones, if someone is not currently involved, that motherfucker is on his phone right now.
Yeah, we're done here. So this game keeps you from wanting to split the party, and it keeps everyone engaged by saying everyone's always playing something, which is good. I like that. I like that kind of system because it keeps people engaged, and it also keeps people on their toes. You know, if you get very used to playing your character, you know, Jim Strongman, the strongest Jim there is, then when they're like, oh, you also have to play as the Queen of Edibles or something, just a weird character for a second, you can, and you go, oh, okay, well, I'm stretching my muscles a little bit, and I'm having a good time.
Yeah.
So I like that.
That's fine.
Yeah. What is your least favorite thing about Deliria, and you're not allowed to say the whole book?
Okay, least favorite thing has got to be the general tone of it. I won't say the words because we've made fun of that shit throughout the entire podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But just the tone of it is, while you aren't technically a medieval shit farmer, you may as well be for all the care it gives you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you're going to be a fairy tale and, you know, Cinderella wasn't anything special, so fuck you, neither are you.
Yeah.
I'm like, great, so that just means things happen to me. I'm not a protagonist as much as I am the main focus of the story, but I don't drive anything forward because I don't have the ability to drive anything forward.
Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right. It feels like you're playing too much of a shit farmer and you're way too dependent on the... I mean, fairy tales, by definition, aren't especially good as things to roleplay because everything that happens to the main character is just whims of fate.
Oh, yeah. It's just, okay, well, I got lost in the woods and then I got found by a witch... And then I got turned into a pig. And you're like, okay, this is all things that happen to the main character.
Yeah.
But the main character very rarely ends up being the protagonist, except for, like, maybe a few stories of, like, oh, this knight goes out and saves someone.
Yeah.
But even then, usually it's the story of the princess that needs saving and the knight just shows up.
Yeah, you think about it as a basic, like, think about Jack and the Beanstalk. Okay, Jack's a moron. He sells a cow for beans. He throws the beans out the window because he's a moron. They grow into a giant thing, and he just goes, well, I'll just climb that, I'll climb that thing, whatever. Well, let's do that. So he climbs the thing, and there's a giant up there, and he's like, oh my god, giant, I'm scared. The giant tries to eat him, and he doesn't. And then he's like, oh, a harp, I should take the harp, because the harp is valuable. And then he goes down, and the giant follows him, and he's like, I guess I'll, oh, no, wait, it just fell down on its own, because it died, because it's old. So the vine falls down. Yay, I win, I am Jack.
Yeah, there are definitely some fairy tale that you could say the main character is an actual protagonist, moves things forward, but most of the time it's just fairies or witches or magic of some kind.
Think about the really old Disney movies. Your Cinderella's and Sleeping Beauties and
Snow White.
Snow White in particular is amazing. That character never does anything for herself.
Oh yeah, she runs and that's about it.
The most autonomy she shows is when she decides to clean some stranger's house.
Pretty much, yeah. And that's it. And that is the level that they assume you will be in this game, and that's what I hate.
Yeah, okay, so, that's fair.
Your least favorite thing about Deliria?
I'm going to say tone, too, but not the same thing about the tone.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about how this book, from start to finish, is just like, I swear, he just walked into a hippie coffee bar on a Wednesday night in 2002 with a tape recorder and just recorded tone poetry for 2 hours and was like, there, done, all set. Boy, they sure did say Wittershins and Entmoot a lot. But whatever, I'm going to put that into the book. That's how it reads. It's just the most poetic-y, gobbledygooky nothing for pages and pages and pages.
Which, I mean, it's fine. When you've got a book about fairies and fairy tales, and you go, okay, when I do the beginning intro to a chapter, it having the kind of language that we've been talking about in the podcast is fine. That's great. Do that. If you have a fairy character, and it's in character for that fairy, and they're saying something in a sidebar or whatever, great, do that. But when you are explaining your entire system, even the, like, crunch of the system, like you're trying to blow someone's mind crazy you are.
It's always trying to expand your mind. It's a book that's trying its best to just be a big old can of nitrous. And it doesn't work because you just get sick of it. You're just like, oh, I really want to see a rule. Can I just see a rule? Turns a page. The breathless stag clatters upon the cobblestones. Dare he enter the goblin market? Just, okay, all right, let's try another page. Perhaps all fish are geniuses. You will never know, for fish fly through the ethereum. Okay, all right, what's my character called? It just keeps going like that.
Yeah, the fact that it just goes forever is insane.
It's, to me, this is the second book I've read about fairies where that's the exact same thing.
Well, yeah, because if you're the type of writer that wants to write about fairies, you're also the type of writer that wants to write like that.
Because I also read the Exalted Fair Folk First Edition.
Ah, yes, by Dr. Moran.
Dr. Moran, and it's the same thing. Like, I've read that book cover to cover twice, and I still can't tell you how anything in it works.
Nope.
It's the same thing. You get it's just a fairy thing. People who start writing about fairies just start saying words like Wittershins, and blessed be and stuff, and they can't stop themselves. It just automatically. I wonder if there's any other species where that happens. Like, if you write about mermaids, do you start writing as if you're Daryl Hannah? Does that happen to
yes,
you?
That's what happens. That is exactly what happens. Congratulations, you figured it out.
It's gonna be 80s movie night here. So there you go. That's my least favorite thing is the tone of the book that never fucking settles down and switches into rules at any point. Okay, would you play Deliria?
Oh, God,
City
no.
of Violence.
I would City of Violence all over this. I would rather play Haven, City of Violence, than Deliria.
Oh, wow, that's terrible.
Like, that is how much I hate everything that has to do with it, because it is offensive to all of my senses. Like, everything about this book just pisses me off.
Mm-hmm.
Even just picking it up without opening the book, just looking at it makes me angry.
The cover is basically one of those sun faces,
It's in a flower, because maybe the sun is a flower, and it blooms with light.
Yeah, that sort of thing. With a weird little black nose.
Yeah.
I'm sure I could come up with some wicked poetry for what black noses are all about, but I'm not going to. So no, you wouldn't play this game. No. And I don't blame you. And
would you play Deliria?
No, but I would play it more readily than I would play Haven City of Violence. Because at least, and I'm going to say that because at least it's simple. I can explain how to play this game to other people if I need to. If I were to release the abridged version of this book where it had nothing but your character has mind, body, and spirit, roll mind plus vocation to accomplish task, I'd be like, yeah, great, that's easy. That's a simple set of rules that I understand and I can write down and codify. And then after that, what I can do is just take a huge basket of magnetic poetry tiles and just fling them at random onto a refrigerator and then write that down as a book.
There you go.
Yeah. So no, I would not play this.
Good.
However, I would like to once again thank Grant Woodward of Saving the Game at savingthegamepodcast.org for submitting the book to us. Thank you, Grant. We're keeping it forever. I don't want to, but we are.
It's happening. We're not mailing anything back. This is probably going to go into a bonfire where we dance naked and sing songs to the fire god.
As awesome as that would be, it's actually going to go on the big collection wall of dumb RPGs we have.
Yeah, well, sadly.
So, once again, thank you very much for your submission. It's been a great time reading it. And sorry we didn't read the second book, but we couldn't. We just couldn't.
Yeah, I couldn't even finish this book all the way.
Yeah, so once again, that's Grant Woodward at savingthegamepodcast.org. Thanks very much for your submission. Okay, so you got anything else you want to talk about?
Nope.
Okay. This has been System Mastery, the podcast about reviewing old role-playing games. If you want us to review an old role-playing game, let us know. You can put it in the comments below, or you can email us at systemmastery@gmail.com. Visit our Facebook page, which is also called System Mastery. Find us at System Mastery at Twitter, or I'm now System Mastery at Reddit, so I guess if you want to hit me up there, you can. There's all kinds of ways to get hold of us, but the easiest one is just to drop the comments below. If you want to send us books, we're happy to accept them. We just recently had another offer, which we're going to take up, to get an old copy of the TSR Buck Rogers.
Woo!
It's been too long since we've done a licensed game, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And that's about it. Please let us know how you think we're doing and what you'd like to hear us review. For System Mastery, I've been Jeff.
I'm John.
And you have a lovely day.
Whimsy! Magic! Mystery! I could keep doing this, but I have to pee!